This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. It's hour two, which means we're on the DraftKings Network now, which of course makes sense because this show is, of course, brought to you by DraftKings. I'm Joe Serralo. He's Mike Palm, live from those gorgeous Circa Sportsbook down there in Fremont in Las Vegas. I'm, of course, joined in remote from sunny Los Angeles. That inversion layer finally wearing off. The sun's peeking out a little bit if I look a little brighter on your screen today. Mike, let's get to the Thunder Maverick series because we kind of glossed over this one. Obviously, a lot of Knicks Pacers talk in that first hour, that big game three tonight. But game two last night, the Thunder hadn't lost a game all postseason. Dallas went in there and beat them. And now suddenly the sixth seed, Dallas Mavericks, or I should say the five seed, rather, they're favorites in the series. Laying $1.20 now as things ship back to Dallas for game three tomorrow night. And what's your take on the Mavericks being favored here over an OKC team that just dropped their first game all postseason and, oh, by the way, is the one seed?
Well, it's interesting, Joe, because Femi and I hypothesized before the playoffs started that if this was the matchup in the second round, we thought the Mavericks might even be favored. But Oklahoma City was so dominant in their sweep of the Pelicans that they did maintain the favorite. The market loves the Mavericks. They really do. I'm not surprised that they're favored in game three. I mean, it was as if the Clippers weren't even going to show up for the series the way they bet the Mavericks, the public. And I have to tell you, I thought the Mavericks played a very good game. They sustained that run from, you know, the mid-second quarter on up through the first part of the third quarter where OKC came from 16 down and actually took a two-point lead. And then once the Mavericks went on a little, I think it was an 8-0 run to get up six again, it sort of looked like the effort that they had expended to come back into the game, the Thunder, that is, they looked a little flat. And all those threes they were hitting in that stretch that got them back in the game weren't going down in the second half. And the Mavericks, you know, got to the double-digit lead and sort of stayed there. I think it's a very interesting series. I was tempted to make a small play on the Mavericks last night just because of Shaq, you know, telling Nikola Jokic he shouldn't have won, that SGA should have been. It's like cursed, right? It's like cursing him. He's going to come out and say that in a very inappropriate time, I thought, and put all this pressure on SGA. But I think this series goes seven, Joe. I think there's not much between these two teams. And probably, if I can find a market like over 6.5 games or over 5.5 games, it might be worth a look.
Yeah, I like that market a lot, and I couldn't agree more. I don't know what Shaq was thinking. I mean, look, we all love Shaq from the entertainment value that he brings to that show, but sometimes the things that come out of his mouth, I mean, him and Charles, their little rant about New Yorkers the other night, sometimes the things they say, I'm like, wow, you know, I guess when you are one of the greatest hoopers to ever lace them up, you really can say anything, because him and Charles sometimes they do say just about anything. I'm on the Thunder in this series, and I personally love that now they are the betting underdogs, that you can get them at even money to win the series. I think that they are the better team. I think that they're the more complete team. They are the deeper team. You know, I had one ticket on last night's game because I didn't want to go and put money on Oklahoma City. I had him in game one. I didn't love them to go up 2-0. Dallas is a tough team to beat back-to-back games, which is why I love where you're going with this series, that it could very well go seven. But SGA, you know, it's really not like Shaq cursed him at all. He had a great game. It was just the supporting cast that didn't really fully show up. But I think when you look at these two teams as a whole, there's a better chance on a routine basis of Oklahoma City's supporting cast showing up than Dallas. I really think that Dallas is thin after Luka and Kyrie, and they caught a break winning a game where Kyrie essentially did nothing on the offensive end. That's a rarity for Dallas. Now they're going home, and one thing that actually jumps out to me is, and you can praise the Mavericks for this because they're consistent whether they're home or away, but they don't have a great home record compared to most other teams that are in the playoffs. 25-16 at home. Now, again, to their credit, they were also 25-16 on the road, so there's some consistency there. But I think Oklahoma City has much more of a home court advantage in this series, that if they could just go steal one, they were 24-17 themselves on the road this year. They can steal one in Dallas, which I think they absolutely will do. I think they're in good shape for the series. So I lean Thunder at even money. like I said, it really just comes down to their depth. And I think the books want you to take Dallas. That's why they're making them, you know, favorites going home. It's still a fair price. You know, if you go, oh, well, Dallas is, you know, they've got potential to be the home team for three of the next five games. And I only have to lay $1.20. People love to bet them because they love to bet Luka, who, by the way, was my MVP pick for the season. I thought Doncic had a phenomenal year. Just that after Luka, there is not a whole lot there, in my opinion. You've got him, Kyrie, and then I think Oklahoma City dominates, you know, that next level of best players on the court after, you know, the top three, SGA, Luka, and Kyrie Irving. Then it's all Thunder after that. And I think that depth and also the youth, I mean, these guys can run the court for days. I think that's going to propel Oklahoma City in the series.
Yeah, it's interesting with Dallas. Since the trade deadline, all the, you know, the statistical people and analytics love this team, right? They had the biggest improvement in net points per 100 possessions and all the statistics. Of course, the end of the regular season playing against teams already eliminated is a different animal. A different animal than the playoffs. And then they meet the Clippers in the first round. And like the stories of the story of the last 5 years in San Antonio, you know, Kawhi holds them hostage. I mean, it's better off if they just knew he wasn't going to play every game, I think, at least right. From the Ty Lue's perspective and how he prepared the team, the not knowing an hour before the game and if he was going to play, and if he was and he wasn't, how much is he going to give you? And so I think that really hurt the Clippers in that first round. I just think this will be a terrific series. Luka, even at half speed, is pretty incredible what he creates on the offensive end of the court. I'm interested in, you know, I didn't know the guy that's going to the coach of the year, Dagano. How I know if it was a hockey, it'd be Daigneau. But this kid's very interesting to me, so I'm going to want to follow him and watch his in-game adjustments because everybody's raved about the job he's done this year.
Yeah, and by the way, to your Kawhi point, which is an excellent spot-on point, weren't the Clippers 0-2 when he played that series? I mean, having him on the court didn't seem to benefit that team at all. And you know, it's a guy who I loved a few years ago, who now at this point in time, he just seems more like a cancer than that guy who's going to get you over the hump, which he was for San Antonio when he won an NBA Finals MVP. He was obviously for Toronto. He's the reason they won the finals that year. His career arc has just really taken quite the turn. Let's flip it back over to the Eastern Conference. Spent a lot of time, of course, in the first hour talking about this game. But, you know, might have some new people tuning in now that we're on DraftKings Network. And Rick Carlisle doing a lot of crying about his Indiana Pacers. They're going home now. If anything, that I just feel like the way he should have approached that press conference was, you know, you can be critical of the refs with a little, you know, some subtle hints, a little moderation. You know, approach it and be like, hey, you know, it seems like we didn't get many 50-50 calls, but now we're going home and we're going to show up and we're going to do what the Knicks did and take care of business at home. Instead, he opted to go the complete crybaby route. So, Mike, you know, game three tonight, they're big favorites. No OG Anunoby. So the Pacers, they're laying 7.5 right now against the Knicks. What do you think we see from this team tonight? Is there going to be that spark, that momentum when they take the court?
You know, it's the line is and to our previous guest, Zach's point about Zach Graham from FTN Fantasy, The line seems a little long, right? Here, you come off two home wins, although they were competitive games. Maybe you would think this game would land 5, 5.5, or 6. 7.5 is a pretty strong number against a Thibodeau team that seems to be in every game and always competitive because of the way they exude effort on the defensive end of the court. You know, Carlisle, they have the option to turn all these plays into the NBA, right? He didn't do anything publicly. They can send the tape in with their analysis and say that this, a heart pushed. And got pushed in the back. Nothing was done, all that. And all these calls they identified. And the NBA can address it. It gets turned over to the Knicks as well. And address it in that way if you're trying to get a more favorable whistle than going public, which, of course, you know, these referees are humans too. And they're all a brethren. They're a very strong union. Look at the Major League Baseball Umpires Union. And they stick up for each other as well. So he's not doing himself any favors going public in terms of getting calls tonight in Indianapolis.
So here's where, from a betting perspective, I'm looking at this game. I don't think that it's a smart bet to lay the 7.5 with Indiana. I'm also, frankly, not confident enough. You know, first game on the road this series, we saw the Knicks game 3. That was the only game that Philly really stuck it to him. That was I guess you could consider that a blowout win for the 76ers. That was in hand with about 5 minutes to go, unlike every other Knicks game this postseason. I think the play here is to look at quarters. And typically in the NBA, the second quarter is when the starters get a blow. They play maybe half the quarter. You see a lot of the bench pieces come in the second. Well, the Knicks don't have that luxury, right? Maybe Alec Burks will play. I think he logged a minute last game. I certainly think he has to play. Otherwise, you're running a six-man rotation. Maybe Jericho Sims. I don't know if I could see it. The guy hasn't even touched the floor this postseason. Maybe he gets some minutes to relieve Hartenstein with Mitch Robinson out. The Knicks don't have depth. We all know this, right? That story has been, it's been beat to a pulp. So you look at their last 3 second quarters. Philadelphia in game six, which the Knicks won, outscored them by 17. Indiana in game one, second quarter, outscored them by 9. Last game, Indiana went up 10 at the half. Well, it was tied after the first quarter. They outscored them by 10 in quarter number two. I think the play here is to look at Indiana second quarter minus 3, because the Knicks starters will be a little gassed and guys like TJ McConnell and the other bench pieces for Indiana will have fresh legs. I think second quarter is my favorite play, Pacers minus 3.
Very interesting point, Joe. I'll follow you on that one.
All right, I love it. We've got more. We're going to hit the ice when we return, so don't go anywhere. Talking some hockey when we come back. It's the Lombardi Line with Joe Cirillo and Mike Palm only on VSiN.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you ready to become your own sports betting expert? Look no further than a VSiN Pro subscription, your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally priced at $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage and ROI, 19 hours of live programming, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, and our exclusive betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Just visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $1.99 with promo code Lombardi. That's VSiN, VSiN.com/subscribe. And now we're going to hit the progressive guest line for our guy, host and director of Leafs Morning Take on the Nation Network, Nick Alberga. Nick, how you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys on this Friday?
Good morning, Nick. You know, I know the Leafs are life there. And when we're going through the DABDA, the stages of grief, funny things happen to us. But this campaign now for Claude Julien to be the next guy. Are you kidding me with this? I mean, every coach for Toronto is very distinctly Waspish. They're not taking a French coach that coached the Canadiens. Babcock, Carlisle, Wilson, Quinn, Murphy, Burns. Explain to me this Claude Julien tweet.
So it's not going to happen. I'm happy you keep me accountable, Mike. That is good stuff, especially in the betting world. The reason why I put it out there, who better than a former head coach of the Boston Bruins, of the Montreal Canadiens, of the Ottawa Senators, to coach a team who has trouble with the Boston Bruins, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Ottawa Senators? That was the reasoning behind it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think ultimately it's going to come down to Craig Berube or Todd McClellan or Joel Quenneville if he gets a shot to interview for this position. But that's the reasoning behind it.
Any shot, and I know you're going from a guy, Keefe, who didn't win in the playoffs to another guy who hasn't, that Brenda Moore gets swept here, wants out of Carolina, and they look at him?
I've been asking around for a good month. Everybody seems to tell me the same thing, that there's a drawer somewhere in an office and there's a contract extension to be signed. Having said that, where there's smoke, there's fire. We saw to begin this second round, the whole story about Brendan Moore wanted to sign an extension, then it was pulled. So maybe that was the extension that was in that drawer somewhere. But I think that's like the definition of negotiating with the media. And I think when push comes to shove, the one thing the Carolina Hurricanes have in their corner is the fact that Brendan Moore's got a family there and doesn't want to leave Carolina. So I think it's unrealistic. And I think they'll move on, because I think if you run the risk, and even if Carolina loses tomorrow in game four, you run the risk of missing out on some really good candidates if you're waiting around for a guy that's not actually going to be there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Zach, I want to look at, or Nick rather, excuse me, our last guest was Zach. I want to look at tonight's action a little bit, and the Edmonton Oilers against the Vancouver Canucks. Edmonton was my pick coming into the playoffs to hoist up the cup at the end of things. And if you look at the way that game one unfolded, up 4-1, blowing that in Vancouver, this Canucks team really has not struck any fear into me throughout the second half of the season. I thought Nashville was actually going to upset them in the first round, and then they come out flat, they go down 4-1, but all of a sudden they turn it around with one of the best comeback postseason wins I've ever seen. What happens tonight, man? Does Edmonton right the ship? Do we see the team that looked dominant through 40 minutes, or does Vancouver at plus money, plus $1.10, do they ride all the momentum?
I think the Oilers respond. Having said that, I think in the betting world, you're always trying to create these narratives to build upon a squad. I think the one thing obviously working against the Vancouver Canucks is the fact that their third string netminder is in there. Doesn't sound like Thatcher Demko is anywhere close to returning for this team. And ultimately, I think that could be their downfall. Having said that, as you just referenced, I loved their fight, their compete level in game one. While we're all wondering about Vancouver's goaltending, we should feel the same way about Stuart Skinner, the number one for the Oilers, who was just dreadful, absolutely dreadful, guys, in game one. But I do expect a bit of a result and a bounce back, I should say, from Edmonton. Important to stress, they're dealing with injuries. Adam Henrique, who didn't play in game one, sounds like he's going to play game two. And Leon Draisaitl, who's one of the best players on the planet, of course, is obviously dealing with something. I think this is going to be your classic signature Connor McDavid moment where he's going to will his team to victory. And I think the Oilers will tie this series at one tonight.
Game three in Boston now between the Panthers and the Bruins tonight. Interesting series here. Boston played very well in game number one. Swayman shows some signs of being human in game two. And I thought Montgomery did the right thing, giving him a little spell there. At the end of the game, big spot here in this series. I think this is a must win for the Bruins here. I think if they lose tonight, they lose this series 4-1. Your thoughts, the Panthers, 130 favorite on the road.
We're in simpatico. I feel the same way. I think it's a massive swing game in this series. Everything we saw in the first two games, and then the way Florida comes out in game two and flexes their muscles like the rock. I mean, you need to respond accordingly. And I think we'll get a firm understanding if they're overthinking their hand when it comes to goaltending as well. Like, Swayman's been a great story, but he looked really, really fatigued in game two. And I think the number I would look at again in this game is the 5.5 total. I think you have Bobrovsky at one end, where I think he's been lights out, I think, again, for the most part. Then you have Swayman. You think he's going to have a better effort. And that's why I'm probably playing the under in 5.5. But I think it's priced accordingly. I like Florida in this game. I think they're the better team in the series. I know I know Boston's coming off a game seven victory against the Leafs, and I think that had something to do with the way they performed in game one. But I just think profoundly, I think Florida's the way better team, so I'm going to back them here in game three.
He's Nick Alberga joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Catch him on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy. I want to stick in the Eastern Conference. Look at this Rangers-Hurricane series. I mean, this one, it seems all but over. Obviously, there have been, four instances where teams come down from 3-0. I don't think Carolina is going to be able to do so against this Rangers team. But when you look at the value and how this one's priced for game four, Mike seems to be on the Hurricane side, although, you know, he mentioned he didn't want to lay that $1.50. To me, though, normally, I would take the home team here. I'd say that they're going to play stopper. They're going to defend their home ice, all that cliche crap. But they have no momentum. I mean, the Rangers, the way that they just went out there, and you thought Carolina had momentum with the late goal in the third, and then a minute and a half into overtime, the Rangers end it. I just feel like all the momentum is in their favor. And the price, value-wise, is a great one at plus 125 on the President's Trophy winners, who are 7-0 this postseason. What's your take on this game? Will Carolina defend home ice, or do the Rangers put them out of their misery?
I was going to say, contrary to popular belief, Mike's actually a pretty smart dude, and I'm right there with him. Like, you can't. The price is too juiced on Carolina to back them, where you almost have to back the team that's won three straight games. Like, that's the way I look at it. Unless you want to lay the goal and a half there, which you see on your screen at plus value. It's been such a weird series because here we go again with Carolina. It's like, oh, all the numbers suggest that Carolina should be in this series. It's like Groundhog Day. This time last year, Rod Brind'Amour, after they were swept, came out the head coach and said it didn't feel like a sweep. Well, surprise, surprise, it was a sweep. And you're looking at it again. And I just don't know how Carolina responds from the way everything transpired and went down in game three, to lose that game on home ice, to lose in OT. And then on top of that, the way Igor Shesterkin is playing right now, and you compare it to Carolina's crease with Freddie Anderson and Pyotr Kochetkov, and the fact that here we go again, Carolina can't score on the power play, which has been a huge theme for this team in postseasons past. I think there's way too much value actually in the New York Rangers, if you can believe it.
All right, Muzzy, I'm going to leave you about 45 seconds here. All right, Pete DeBoer, you had your excuse in game one, the seven-game series. You tired, fatigue. Last night, Dallas played as well as they could the first two periods. That's the Ottinger we thought for the last 4 years we were going to get. He was terrific. They're up 4-0. Colorado looks dejected. And here we are 3 minutes in the game. They're up 4-3. That's tremendously concerning for me as someone that has a Stars future. Who wins this series?
I'm going to back Dallas. I should preface again by saying Colorado was my day one pick to start the season to win the cup, man. They got some dogs on that roster. They just don't take no for an answer. And that would scare the hell out of me if you're Dallas. Just look at the first two games of the series. But at some point in time, the Stars have to break through. I love their Tanev pickup at the deadline. I love Heiskanen. Dude, we've talked about this all season. It's going to come down to Jake Oettinger. Can he be that prize possession in between the pipes? If he can make those saves, I think Dallas wins it. I think they'll find a way to squeak out this series in seven games.
Good stuff, Nick. Thanks so much for the time, man. Really appreciate you.
My pleasure, guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Nicky.
Nick Alberga, go follow him on Twitter again, at the Golden Muzzy. When we return, back to the diamond. You heard Mike and I's best bets. Now Anthony Recker is going to join us. Former MLB catcher. Nowadays, he's all over MLB Network. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into the Lombardi Line on Visa.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on Visa, the sports betting network.
If you haven't checked out the newly revamped VSiN.com, head over there right now. We've got a betting preview for tomorrow's UFC fight night, betting splits for tonight's NBA and NHL playoff games, and of course, picks, and more picks. That's VSiN, VSIN.com. Get over there right now. We're going to head back to the progressive guest line right here on the Lombardi Line. Joe Cirillo, of course, Mike Palm in the co-host chair. And joining us now, one of my favorite guests to talk baseball with. You see him on MLB Network all the time. He was in the league for about 7 years. Anthony Recker. Rec, how you doing, man?
Good, Joe. Good to hear you. I'm sorry you can't see me today. I couldn't, you know, quite make it in front of the computer. I know you really wanted to see my face, so I'm sorry for disappointing you.
Any day I get to see your face is a good one, and it reminds me I'm not the best-looking person in the room. So, yeah, thanks for making this a phoner, Rec. Hey, I gave out my play of the day today. It was the Phillies run line. I was happy to lay $1.20 with Ranger Suarez on the bump against Trevor Rogers in this one. What's your take on that game, Rec? Are you with me on that play of the day?
I'm absolutely with you. I don't even understand how it could be at 120. I don't care if you're giving the Marlins five runs tonight. This is one of those situations where it's not only you have Ranger Suarez on the mound, who's been incredibly hot, incredibly consistent lately, and just flat out dominant. He's been as good as Zach Wheeler all season long. But you have a Phillies team that is coming in absolutely smoking hot. This team is playing great baseball. They're scoring runs. They're obviously not allowing the opposition to score anything. And like I said, with Ranger Suarez on the mound, you don't really need to worry about that. And then you get a Marlins team coming in that, despite the fact that they've been a little better of late, this team just has not been able to get it going. And Trevor Rogers over the last couple of years just You know, he had some magic a few years ago, that first year when he came up, and he just has not been able to replicate that over the last couple of seasons. So this seems to me like an obvious matchup.
Anthony, I've got my eyes in Anaheim tonight. Alec Marsh will get the start for the Royals, coming off the 15-day injured list against Griffith Cannon. Your thoughts on how Marsh bounces back off the injury?
Yeah, I mean, I like this. I like this play a lot because the Royals have been another one of those teams that have been playing really good baseball all season. They've been really consistent, and despite the fact that they don't have a ton of guys in their lineup that have been putting up a lot of runs, they've been pitching. They've been pitching very well, very consistently. Waka did it last night, and I expect Alec Marsh to come off this IL stint. It was a short one. It was the minimum 15 days. That's it. You know, he's back, and you know, outside of that one outing he had where he gave up four runs, he's given up three or less in every outing. His last two before he went on the IL, he didn't give up a single run. So I think this is one of those positions where he's primed to come back. He's in a good position. He basically got a nice little rest, and he's ready to come back and come back and fire against an Angels team that just really has not been able to produce all year, despite the fact that they have some guys in their lineup that have been producing. Taylor Ward's been having a decent season. Obviously, Trout's down now, but Joe Adell looks like maybe that guy that we thought he could be a few years ago as a prospect, but they just can't put it all together. Their pitching has not been very good, and offensively, for whatever reason, despite the fact they have a couple guys that are producing, they have not been able to score runs. And so I expect this Royals team to go out there and dominate tonight.
Yeah, that game, of course, out near me in Anaheim. I want to stick in Southern Cal because we've got a great rivalry brewing tonight. Tyler Glasnow and the Dodgers taking on Michael King and the Padres. Now, Rec, depending on where you look, if you shop around, Glasnow's K prop varies between 5.5 in some shops, 6.5 at others. 5.5 seems low. This Padres team, fifth best in terms of fewest Ks per game this year, but when they're at home, they rank just 20th in that department at about 8.5 Ks per game at Petco this season. What are your thoughts on Glasnow's K prop, and then of course King and how he approaches this Dodgers lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I love Glasnow on the K prop tonight. That makes a lot of sense, especially if you can get it around 5.5. That seems just ludicrous to me. You know, this is a guy who's capable of going out and putting up double digit Ks on anyone in any given night. The fact that, you know, the Padres have only seen him once, it was his first start of the year in Korea, I think that bodes well for him. I think he's got a really good opportunity to come in. And like you said, the Padres at Petco, not known as a hitter's ballpark. That's a great place to pitch. So as a hitter, you tend to try to do a little bit more. And if you're going to try to do that against Tyler Glasnow, you're going to be in big trouble all night with that high velocity fastball, the huge breaking ball. I mean, he's going to have a really good night, I think, against the San Diego team. So that seems like a great bet. And then I would say that, you know, this Padres team with Michael King on the mound, the Dodgers have seen him twice now this year. That second time just coming a few weeks ago. The fact that he's facing them again already, they've put up a few runs on him already. They've hit him hard in both outings. I think that bodes well for this Dodgers offense. I see them scoring more runs again. Obviously, they've got a good game plan against him. He's one of those guys that relies on chase. He doesn't get a ton of swing and miss in the zone. He relies a lot on chase. This is a Dodgers lineup that doesn't chase much. They do a really good job at making you come into the zone. They'll take their walk, and, you know, obviously they have plenty of guys who are capable of putting the ball out of the ballpark and putting crooked numbers up on the board. Max Muncy has been hot of late. They can put up crooked numbers. I see them having a really good night as well.
Rec, for Major League Baseball bettors, it's Patrick Corbin Day again, as the Nationals are at Fenway tonight. Poor Patrick has yet to win a game this year with the ERA over 6. And Tanner Houck, the Boston ace, counters for the Red Sox. ERA, although he's 3-3, ERA below 2. How do you look at this game?
Yeah, I mean, Tanner's been awesome this year. Patrick Corbin, unfortunately, just his career has taken a different turn since he signed that contract in Washington. You know, it's been one of those guys that you, as a hitter, you're there's a fight at the bat rack to try to get up there to hit off this guy. So, I expect them to be able to go out there. They have a really good offense, despite the fact that they haven't putting up as many runs as of late. They've got a nice offense. They can put the ball out of the ballpark. But Houck has just been incredible. I mean, he's been so consistent all year. It seems like every time he goes out there, 6 is the minimum he's giving you. He might give you 7 or 8. Which is really surprising for a guy who's spent as much time in the bullpen as he has. But this team is pitching the ball, I mean, tremendously. So seems like a really good value bet to me to go Boston. Even run line at 1.5, I think would be a great idea.
Yeah, something else that just jumped out at me there was the total, maybe going over 8, because you know Corbin and the Nats are going to give some up. And then, you know, to the contrary, even though Hauk has been great, the Nationals lineup has been a really pleasant surprise. So I could see Boston winning this one, you know, maybe 6-3, 7-3, and you going over that number of 8. Rec, let's talk some young pitching, because the Pirates just seem to have a couple absolute studs lined up. Jared Jones tonight at home against Chicago. I'm interested also, that K prop is one where you can shop around and find either 6.5 or 7.5. That might be a key number. He's gone for 7 or more in all but one start this year. And then Paul Skenes tomorrow, making that highly anticipated MLB debut on a Saturday matinee game for the Pirates. So Jones, Skenes, back-to-back days. What do you like tonight from Jones? And is there reason for immense optimism in the future with Pittsburgh?
I really like Jared Jones tonight. I mean, obviously, this guy has been tremendous this early part of the season. You know, he's not just striking guys out. He's going deep into games. He's given this team, you know, a lot of innings and a lot of just consistent effort out there on the mound. You know, he's one of the few guys that you could say has given up three runs or less in every start so far this season. You know, like you mentioned, the K prop being where it is, you know, if this guy goes 6 innings for you, he's putting up, close to double digit Ks, it feels like, almost every time. Last time out, you know, 10 against the Rockies. I just love where he's at. And then I think about Paul Skenes. This kid is just tremendous. I mean, he's a tremendous talent. He's got a lot of, it's not necessarily his delivery, but he's got a lot of poise and ability that I saw from Matt Harvey in 2013 when I first got to the Mets. And, you know, it's sad kind of where that story obviously ended up, but that speaks to the potential that Paul Skenes has. And that he's obviously got a little bit more velocity. I mean, Harvey could run it up there too, but this guy's averaging 99.9 in the minor leagues right now with his fastball. It's really incredible. And I mean, he's got a plethora of other pitches. He's got 5 pitches total. He doesn't go to the curveball and the changeup that much, but the changeup actually is really good. I think he can go to both more often. And if they allow him to stretch out in Pittsburgh, I know they've been only letting him go about 3 every outing in the minor leagues, which I don't understand. If they let him stretch out with him and Jared Jones, you've got Keller out there in that rotation. I think there's more in that offense they haven't shown yet. You know, that is on the back of their baseball cards. They've done it, you know, just as recent as last year. I think this team really has a chance to make some noise in the NL Central and particularly in the NL Wildcard.
Hey, reckon about 15, 20 seconds or less before we hop off here. Another young kid pitching tomorrow, Christian Scott for the Mets. You caught all those young kids, Harvey, Noah, Zach Wheeler. Who does Scott remind you of in about 15 seconds?
Scott, I mean, I would say right now I would compare him most actually to Noah Syndergaard, because I see 2 pitches. I know he's working on a third. That changeup's getting a little bit better. It's mostly fastball slider. If he can really learn to harness the third pitch, I see him elevating his game and getting to a level where he could be a true number one for a long time.
Rec, really appreciate the time. Guys, don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're wrapping up the Lombardi line with Would Palm Have a Qualm? You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned, only on Visa.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on Visa, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers, bet $5, you'll get $150 in bonus bets instantly. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings, where the crown is yours.
Some bets just don't sit right with Mike Palm.
You took all the money you made and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters?
Are you considering a bet that would make him sick?
I'm going to throw up. I think I'm going to throw up.
It's time to ask Mike, would Palm have a qualm?
So let's ask him. Mike, would Palm have a qualm? Let's start with an MLB bet that actually contradicts my best bet of the day. I'm on the Phillies run line. Would you take the Marlins money line getting $1.70.
Well, I'm obligated to have big qualms here because this is you and Rec love this bet. So how could I go against it? Listen, I'm not betting against the Phillies unless Aaron Nola is starting. I think their rotation is terrific, but I'm an anti-Nola guy. I've been so for several years. Joe, if you score three, if the Phillies score three, Nola's going to give up five on Wednesday. I mean, if you score one, he gives up two. I just can't win with this guy. I stay away from him. Suarez, no false notes all year. This guy's incredible what he's done. I mean, he came up, and I would always say, he's going to give you five. He's going to give up two or three runs. You could be very consistent. Now he's giving you six, and he gives up zero or one. I'm with you guys. I'm on the Phillies today. Big qualms with any Marlins plays.
I love it. And just quickly to your point on Suarez, look at his last start. You might look at the box score and be like, well, he went six, but he gave up three. That's, you know, a 4.5 ERA. It was pouring rain. I don't know how that game continued. And he had to watch his guys run around and around and around the bases. He was on the bench forever. They were up like 10-1 by the time he gave up those last couple runs. I love it, Mike. I'm with you. Gunnar Henderson to win the American League MVP 5-1. Would Palm have a qualm?
Yeah, qualm. I have a too short. I think it's too short for him. I think, you know, I always said Shohei shouldn't win because he was hitting 270. That's what Gunner's is hitting right now. I think I'd rather take a look at guys that are a little longer here. I know the Astros haven't done well. I think, though, that over time, they will get themselves back into the mix. I think Kyle Tucker's an interesting guy at 20-1. If I was going to take a short price, I'd rather take Witt than Gunnar Henderson right now.
Tucker, an RBI machine. Yordan Alvarez, my preseason guy. But, you know, if the Astros aren't in the playoff mix, if they're not even competitive, it might be tough to sell the voters on an Astro. Speaking of short odds, the Dodgers just +110 to be the number one overall seed. Would Palm have a qualm?
I'm going to say no qualm. That doesn't necessarily mean I would make the bet. You know, I came into the season with an anti-Dodgers edge here because I thought they were a team, Joe, of mismatched parts. Too many outfielders. Well, they moved Betts to short. It's not the easiest transition. And then I thought to win 104 games, if you were going to bet their win total, you're going to have to get production out of Kershaw. We don't know. That's still an unknown. And that Buehler would need to be terrific coming back because I didn't think their starting pitching was deep enough. Buehler started the other night. I thought he wasn't terrific. He didn't have good command, even of the fastball. But it's his first start back. I've just been an anti-Buehler guy. So on top of the injury, that's why I didn't think that he could return to like Cy Young-like form. But then the Braves go out there last week and they just crush him, right? They just crushed him. Phillies are playing awful well right now. I think 110's a little too short because you got two competitors there. I'm going to say not a qualm, but not a bet I'm making right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the Dodgers are a tad bit overrated. The value on Atlanta, not tremendous, but I think Atlanta is better. I think that lineup strikes more fear into the hearts of opposing pitchers. And then you got Philly, who I believe the Phillies right now do have the best record in the National League. So if you think that they can sustain this success at 5-1, that's certainly the value play. Mike, it's been almost 2 hours. We haven't touched on any football. Let's do it. The number one overall draft pick, because who doesn't like to talk about drafts that are 50 weeks away? Shador Sanders +350 to go number one. Would Palm have a qualm with that pick?
We might both be done at Visa, but anyhow, here +350. I think the intangible thing is what's going to hurt him, and this whole Colorado model and what he and his dad are doing, there's going to be too much detraction there. I'm not taking him as a short price as the favorite. I'd rather wait and let the season develop before I would take this short of a price. But all this attacking everybody that leaves Colorado, anything they say, is really concerning to me if I'm an executive in the NFL.
Yeah, I could not agree with you anymore. Look, I want to love Shador Sanders. I wanted this Deion Shador Colorado experiment to work out, and it looked early on in the year promising, and then they go 1-8 in conference play. You can't go 1-8 in conference play and then get on Twitter behind your keyboard or your iPhone and start bashing your former teammates. I mean, the kid who he went after is playing at Austin Peay now. Don't you have better things to do than bash a slot receiver at Austin Peay? That just shows tremendous immaturity. And by the way, I know that graphic came and went, but if you want to look value, and I wouldn't say to bet it because I don't like betting things 50 weeks away. But if you want to talk about value, Cam Ward, Washington State, now at Miami, was at Incarnate Word before Washington State, 22-1. I think he might be the best quarterback in the country this year. And if that translates to him going number one, just something to keep an eye on. Speaking of quarterbacks, JJ McCarthy to start week one for the Vikings is plus 120. Sam Darnold, the favorite, minus 160. When it comes to McCarthy starting at plus 120, would Palm have a qualm with that?
Just to go back to the Cam Ward comment, go back and watch his game at the Rose Bowl against UCLA. I was riding Washington State early in the year, cashing all those tickets, and then that game happened against UCLA, who had a very good defense, though, by the way. You know, I don't have a qualm with this bet because I think there's a decent chance that McCarthy does start. They picked this guy. They moved up. This is the quarterback Minnesota wanted, and it's because he's polished. It's because he's already accomplished. It's because he was already mature, not turning the ball over, good on third down. Yeah, he had a great offensive line and running game at Michigan and a great head coach, but I think they picked a guy that was very ready to come into the league, and I don't think that necessarily that Darnold holds enough stature, like the next question we're going to get to, where you have to start him because you can't go back from him if you don't start him.
Yeah, I mean, Darnold, you're 100% right, doesn't hold that stature. It's not like Gardner Minshew is there, in which case I'd say he's the clear week one guy. But McCarthy, what scares me is he's very young. I mean, he's just, isn't he 21 years old? And you're going to have to throw more than 13 passes in an NFL game. So he might be a week four, week five guy. But let's look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Justin Fields to start week one for the Steelers, plus 450, and that's to start at quarterback, not kick returner.
Yeah.
Russ Wilson, you're laying minus 700 on that. So when it comes to Fields at that value, would Palm have a qualm?
Well, I'd need another zero there, I think, to take that bet. A big qualm, unless Wilson gets injured or something like that happens. That's the only way. We know what kind of a prima donna he is, right? I mean, they lined up when he left Seattle to talk about it. The offensive line hated him in Denver, Peyton Hayden. You got him to start him. You're not going to put him on the bench. He's going to be, you know, if he's the backup to Fields, what do you think you're going to get out of him from a mental and emotional standpoint? So that's why I say the stature, you've got to start Russell Wilson. I'm not as anti-Fields as Lombardi is. I mean, I'm in the camp that I didn't think he was a transcendent player. He shows great flashes, right? And if you can incorporate his running game, you got to get him to read quicker. He takes too quick to read the field. That's the big thing with him. And ultimately, he's not going to ever be the most accurate passer. But if he could get his reads quicker, I think he could be a winning quarterback in the NFL.
I agree with you 100%, Mike. I actually love Justin Fields, and I think that two things are going to happen. I think Justin Fields is going to be the starter about halfway through the season. And I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers, like they do every year, like clockwork, will go over their 8.5 win total. Before we get to the couple of hockey plays in this segment, what do you think about the Steelers over under 8.5 wins? Are you with me on the over?
Well, Tomlin never has a losing record, so unless there's a tie, they've got to go. It's the division is so tough. I do expect Baltimore to regress. My biggest positive lean going into the season at this point right now is I think the Bengals are going to have a standout year with Burrow healthy. The best single game a team played all year was Cincinnati at San Francisco last year.
Absolutely. I made a lot of money on that game. Let's hit the ice. Florida Panthers, team total. They've got an electrifying offense. Over 5.5 at plus 750. Would Palm have a qualm with that one?
Yeah. The price is juicy. But look, I rave about them being the best team. But now you're on the road. It's a different animal. And Swayman's back with a little bit of rest being pulled early. I think that's a tall stretch to ask. I'm with Nikki Alberga here. I think the game under 5.5. Is the play. So necessarily they can't go over 5.5 themselves.
There you go. Last one. I'll tell you what, if you don't, I'll have a qualm with this one. Minnesota, the Timberwolves, money line, laying $1.85 tonight. Would Palm have a qualm?
I have a qualm because if you're going to bet Minnesota, lay 3.5 here. Not the line. That's my qualm with it, is the attack of how you bet the game. I'm not saying they're not going to win, but why would you lay 175? I don't think there's anything to suggest that this game is going to be particularly close one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And that line was 4.5 2 hours ago. It's come down to 3.5. I would pounce on the 3.5 if I was leaning Minnesota money line. That'll do it for the Lombardi line. He's Mike Palm. I'm Joe Cirillo. Thanks for tuning into us on VSiN. And don't go anywhere. Sharp Money up next right here on VSiN.